The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And the cover story begins on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Growth Starts Here. For North Carolina small towns, developers are desperate for water and sewer infrastructure. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Thirsty Towns. For North Carolina small communities, developers rely on water infrastructure to grow. And this is written by Ben Tobin. Darren Coons bought dozens of acres in Creedmoor in 2018 with hopes of building a major mixed-use community one day. The Raleigh developer has been sitting on that empty land ever since. But across the triangle, growth depends on whether a community can provide water and sewage access. Southern Granville County has faced major challenges with its aging sewer infrastructure, leaving Creedmoor with only 5,026 people. Despite its prime location, Creedmoor only added 27 residents from 2022 to 2023, according to U.S. Census estimates. Coons knew it would be a waiting game when he bought the land, but he didn't anticipate this much waiting. "I didn't think it would take this long," he said, "but I felt it would probably be a fool's errand to guess exactly how long it was going to take to get sewer to the land and make decisions based on that. The calculated risk I took was that at some point utility improvements would come along and there'd be availability." Coons' patience finally will be rewarded. The South Granville Water and Sewer Authority broke ground in March on a $75 million project that will address problems with the utility and increase capacity for future growth. That project is set to wrap up in 2027 or 2028, and Coons expects to break ground on his project next year. Creedmoor is only 20 miles from Raleigh's Crabtree Valley Mall, but in many ways it's a world apart. Without adequate water infrastructure, Southern Granville has missed out on the Triangle's explosive growth, while communities such as Clayton and Sanford have surged. Even a modern world faces the ancient need for water, and as development has flowed to where water is plentiful, Creedmoor has been left high and dry, resulting in years of unrealized tax dollars and missed economic development opportunities. "The whole Southern Granville area has suffered in terms of growth because there's been no opportunity," Coon said. "Everybody knew there's nothing you can do up here." And in many ways, the Triangle's growth has been defined by where water is available, as many developers and home builders alike do not choose to play the long game like Coon's. "To not know if you can get a permit for a house because of water and sewer issues, that kills a deal for some people," said Erica Leatham, vice president of land for the Raleigh Division of M&I Homes. "You have to sit there and hemorrhage money while you're waiting for the county to decide if you can get a permit. A lot of people don't have the stomach for that." Developers are thirsty to invest in rural Halo County surrounding the core of the triangle, seeing the potential for soaring returns on land that keeps rising in value. But time is money, and in the real estate business, speed to market matters. So if a municipality has outdated water and sewer infrastructure, that increases the uncertainty of investments coming to fruition. "We do have a huge need on water and sewer," said Lee Lilly, North Carolina Secretary of Commerce. "A lot of aging systems that are out there, the cost of either outfitting or replacing them can be too much for particularly smaller communities to handle. That is a big deal, not only for commercial and economic development purposes, but for just maintaining the number of people who live in your town or city. The longer these areas take to find a sustainable solution, the further they fall behind their neighbors in terms of growth opportunities." Struggling to support growth. Creedmoor, Butner, and other areas of southern Granville County aren't the only areas that have struggled to provide water supply to match demand from developers and home builders. Pittsboro and Chatham County had 15 development moratoriums and extensions between 1999 and 2011, and up until a recent merger with the city of Sanford, the town lacked a growth in water and sewer capacity that rendered project approval difficult for developers to receive from the town commissioners. Also in Chatham, Siler City has struggled as well. With an ongoing sewer moratorium, Siler City's population has grown by less than 200 people between 2010 and 2023, according to census estimates. Siler City has great potential to grow. Chipmaker Wolfspeed wants to hire 1,800 workers for its new facility outside Siler City. In neighboring Randolph County, Toyota says it will hire more than 5,000 workers for an electric vehicle battery manufacturing facility. Homes for workers could follow, but only if the area has the water necessary. And though Siler City is also planning to merge its utilities with Sanford, having sewer capacity effectively cut off for new projects has spelled trouble, according to town manager Jack Meadows. The moratorium is stunting growth right now, Meadows said in an interview in November. And the moratorium is not necessarily all about capacity. It's also about the filtering of the plant and improving water quality. But that is all being worked on, and we will have capacity. Siler City isn't alone in among infighting through moratorium woes. Dunn is currently the most populous municipality in Harnett County, with just shy of 8,600 residents. That title could change very soon. While Dunn lost around 700 residents between 2010 and 2023, Harnett County's Anger saw more than 67% growth over that period, with its population now sitting at around 7,300. And Lillington, with a population of nearly 5,000, has thousands of new homes in the pipeline. One of Dunn's original names was Luck Now, but with water and sewer, the town hasn't quite had that luck. The city was placed under a sewer moratorium in 2021 after the state determined it was unable to adequately treat the volume of wastewater it was receiving. Since then, the city has negotiated a special order by consent where it would be allowed to allocate additional capacity on an ongoing basis as it completes infrastructure improvements for the facility. The completion of all the projects, totaling around $66 million, is expected to be wrapped up by the end of next year, with the moratorium potentially being lifted in the spring of 2027, according to outgoing city manager Steve Neuschafer. Neuschafer said Dunn is currently open for business and that the system has the capacity to support more than 1,000 additional homes without any problem at all. He said the moratorium has been a nice pause button to learn from the massive waves of growth in Anger and Lillington, but that it did lead to missed opportunities. We had several greenfield developments that were ready to make a purchase and start the process, Neuschafer said. Unfortunately, we were in a position where we were not able to accommodate those requests, and it was difficult. For a number of years, we would have loved to have had that kind of push for development, and at the time, we were starting to think that we missed out on something. Water policy challenges. Some counties have chosen to limit how much development can occur at a given time. One that places guardrails around water allocation is the second fastest growing county in North Carolina. The Franklin County Water and Sewer Allocation Ordinance was established in 2017 with preserving future capacity in mind. Among many parts of the ordinance, two pieces are particularly important for residential developers and home builders. Residential subdivision phases are limited to a maximum of 50 units per approval from the Franklin County Board of Commissioners in a given calendar year. To receive additional allocation, at least 30% of units in the prior phase, or 15 homes for a 50-lot phase, must have homeowner utility accounts. Three representatives of home builders told Triangle Business Journal that they have been wary of building in Franklin County due to this allocation policy. Jacob Rogers, CEO of the Triangle Community Coalition, a nonprofit focused on land use policy and property rights, said the policy is bizarre to get through for developers and home builders. If you're trying to plan a community, which our members are, it's really tough to do that in 50-unit increments, Rogers said. It creates a wait-and-see approach that provides uncertainty if applicants will ever get more allocation. Ryan Preble, interim county manager for Franklin County, and Chris Doherty, director of the county's public utilities, said they actively communicate with developers to ensure they know what the expectations are. I've had some developers say, I don't know if we can do it up here because of that phased approach. We'd like to get in and get out, Doherty said. But I tell them, this is what we have to offer. If you choose to develop in Franklin County, we welcome you. We do not have any capacity issues, and the ordinance is helping with that. Preble said the county is always evaluating whether it should change the allocation numbers and how it would go about those changes. Turning toward alternatives. Unable to get water or sewer services from some counties, a flock of developers and home builders have turned to an alternative source of utility, Aqua. A subsidiary of Essential Utilities Incorporated, Aqua provides service to communities in more than half of North Carolina's 100 counties. Some notable communities Aqua provides water and wastewater services for are Chapel Ridge in Chatham County and the Flowers Plantation in Johnston County. Ruffin Poole, Director of Development and Regulatory Affairs for Aqua, said all the prosperity North Carolina has seen with economic investments and subsequent housing demand has been a big challenge for a lot of municipalities. As developers want to build housing, they're looking for land. Land gets pushed further and further out for development, he said. With that, a lot of times those communities either don't have the availability to provide services to where the developers want to put their product, or they're restricted because they know they're not going to be able to get there in a certain time frame. So it inhibits or restricts the developer's ability to build, and at that point in time, they have to look for other alternatives. That's where we get approached to help fill that gap. Specifically, the bread and butter for Aqua, according to Poole, are unincorporated areas outside of any municipality where there might not be water or sewer capacity available from a county. According to an Aqua spokesperson, the organization invested approximately $58 million and $55 million in infrastructure during 2023 and 2024, respectively. That is up from $35 million in 2019. Aqua serves around 323,000 people across North Carolina. Of that, it provides 114,000 people and 36,000 people in the Triangle region with water and wastewater services, respectively, from Aqua's central operations based out of Cary. Funding water and sewer. Joel Genesee, Raleigh Division President of Smith Douglas Homes, is passionate about providing more affordable housing options for teachers, nurses, and first responders, but municipal and county issues with water and sewer infrastructure and improvements that governing bodies may require from home builders make offering a low-cost product difficult in certain communities. Many Triangle area communities have grown substantially in the last decade and so have their tax bases, yet the municipalities often place the full responsibility of improving infrastructure on the developers of a specific community, which drives up costs for the new resident, he said. A cost incurred at a higher rung often gets passed down the chain to the end customer, according to Gregory Chiraklis, a professor at UNC Chapel Hill, who is an expert in water resource management. In places out west like Denver that are rapidly growing but struggle with water scarcity, one-time hookup fees or charges for connecting to a municipal utility system are quite expensive, Chiraklis said. Even in Pittsburgh, the hookup fee is now $15,100 per standard house, whereas it previously cost $12,000 per house. If communities around the Triangle begin to get to that point, they aren't yet, but that hookup fee is going to become increasingly expensive, Chiraklis said. Lining up for first flush. Coons isn't the only one filled with hope about Creedmoor sewer improvements coming to fruition. Scott Schroyer, executive director of the South Granville Water and Sewer Authority, anticipates that within 5 years of completing the $75 million Interstate 85 Sanitary Sewer Improvement Project, the total number of endpoints or individual connection points where services reach a home, business, or facility should double to well above 13,000 because of additional capacity. We're making modifications here to accommodate some of this growth that we're seeing a lot quicker than I anticipated, Schroer said. We're going to have a lot of people lined up for that first flush when we complete this project. Schroer, who started at the utility in 2019, says he is hearing more frequently from developers and is actively working with about a dozen on large projects. He declined to share specifics on the developers and the projects. Coons fully anticipates the Southern Granville area will see pretty significant growth in the next couple years because it has been held back by this capacity issue, and now that issue is resolved, he said. That includes his own project with more than 500 homes and more than 100,000 square feet of retail space. It's no longer a question of if, it's just when, he said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Industrial space remains in demand. Welcome Park in Durham, among many industrial parks, seeing big interest. If a developer were building a retail space the size of Crabtree Valley Mall, the market would be buzzing about it. But a new industrial development near Durham is roughly the same size, and a reminder that industrial space is rolling, which much of the commercial real estate market is struggling. Welcome Venture Park, just northeast of Durham, has 394,800 square feet of space in Phase 1. Houston's Welcome Group has already leased 80% of the first phase, up from 50% just 2 months ago. Some of that is leased to Virginia's Cavalier Logistics, and executives from its Japanese parent, Mitsubishi Logistics Group, will visit May 12 to celebrate. Phase 2, likely to deliver by first quarter 2026, will have two buildings, each with 100,000 square feet of space, and will go vertical this summer. Phase 3, with four buildings and a total of 700,000 square feet, will follow immediately behind that. That adds up to 1.3 million square feet, which is basically the retail space for Crabtree, 1.3 million. Randy Warren, whose RW2 development company is developing the park, said intense interest from pharmaceutical companies is part of the demand. And we are proximate to I-85, so we can reach up and down the coast, he said. It's a similar story in Knightdale, where Wake Stone Property Company will increase the size of its seventh building by 30% in its 1.2 million square foot Hinton Oaks Industrial Park. That park has fully leased the first five buildings. According to TBJ's space publication, industrial space had a 7.62 vacancy rate in fourth quarter 2024, reflecting in part the Triangle's population surge. The residential growth is not to be discounted, Warren said, and some of our smaller tenants service that residential growth. Crabtree Mall lands tenant for former Sears spot. Crabtree Valley Mall is getting sporty. Public records with the City of Raleigh indicate that Dick's House of Sport, the experiential venue of Dick's Sporting Goods, is taking over the space that was formerly Sears at the mall along Glenwood Avenue. The location will be the first Dick's House of Sport in Raleigh. A location in Durham Streets at South Point is also in the works in a former Sears building. Currently, Fayetteville has the only Dick's House of Sport in the state, according to the company's website. It's unclear when the new Dick's offering will open. Well, bummer, Avalo cancels flight to Bahamas. Raleigh-Durham International Airport is so used to adding flights that it comes as a bit of a shock to see a flight canceled, but Avalo Airlines has dropped flights to the Bahamas a month before launch. The demand in bookings were not where we wanted them to be successful, Avalo spokeswoman Courtney Goff said in an email. Goff said Avalo's flights to Montego Bay, Jamaica, and Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic were doing well. Student housing near NC State nets big price. A luxury student housing portfolio near the NC State University campus has sold for more than double its assessed value. Citrine Partners paid $10.68 million for student housing rentals on Kelford and Gorman Streets near the NC State South Campus, according to Wake County deed records. Citrine is based in Charlotte and owned by Mike Hung. Records show Citrine made the purchase along with partners Mark Munichman and Josh Fuller of Blue Ridge Capital. And finally, Foundation to Support Raleigh Police hires ED. An effort to support the Raleigh Police Department has tapped a longtime leader at the Umstead Hotel and Spa as its first executive director. The Raleigh Police Department Foundation, a nonprofit sparked by Brenda Gibson and other local leaders to provide fresh resources for the police, has hired Kathy Brown. She spent 19 years at the Umstead, where she oversaw human resources. The foundation arose after concerns about finding and retaining police and giving them the resources they need. The foundation has put up billboards around the city thanking officers for their work and has also helped fund some police initiatives. This is an exciting opportunity to serve a city I love and to help ensure our officers have the support and resources they need to serve the community effectively and compassionately, said Brown, an NC State University graduate. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Lauren Onasorge. Apple still on for RTP, commerce leader says. Secretary Lilly says Apple remains committed to big plans in the Triangle. Apple's massive plan for a research and development hub in Research Triangle Park is still a go, at least as far as top officials in North Carolina are concerned. Last year, the California technology giant disclosed that it was pausing long-talked-about plans for a 3,000-job campus in Research Triangle Park. Shovels had yet to move at the site located off Lewis Stevens Drive in Little Drive. But that in no way means the plan has changed, according to comments made by Lee Lilly, North Carolina Secretary of Commerce, during a visit to Triangle Business Journal's office May 6. Lilly said his team talks to Apple frequently and views the blockbuster project as a success, regardless of what ultimately happens in Research Triangle Park. That's because they've already created 800 jobs at lease space at the MetLife campus in Cary. Ultimately, the creation of that RTP campus is something they have committed to, Lilly said. They have never hedged on it in any meeting that I've been in with them, and the only thing that they've asked for is a little more time to be able to bring that to fruition. Lilly said the state has reached out consistently to ask how the state can help make sure this project is a success. A similar situation is VinFast, the Vietnamese car maker that, despite big aspirations, has yet to move dirt in Chatham County. Lilly said the state remains in frequent contact with C-level executives. He said his team met with its local leadership team 3 weeks ago to understand what their thinking is in this marketplace. They're another company that has said consistently, "We're hopeful to get to a point where we can go vertical again sometime this year," Lilly said. Stein looks for common ground, economic wins. This story written by Lauren Onasorge. Governor Josh Stein says his intention is to find common ground in order to get things done in an increasingly partisan world. Stein, a Democrat who took office in January, said there's a lot that he and his Republican colleagues agree on, from the need to recruit high-paying companies to the state, to solving the child care shortage. Stein and Commerce Secretary Lee Lilly met with the Triangle Business Journal staff May 6 for an in-depth conversation as the economy enters a new era given the policies of the Trump administration. Stein stressed that his plan is to come up with bipartisan solutions on the issues that are non-ideological and then try to get them implemented. Stein said he intends to take a leading role in recruiting companies to North Carolina. In addition to heading to the Select USA Investment Summit coming up in Maryland, he plans to fly to a major air show in Europe and visit Japan this fall. The goal is to connect with companies and get North Carolina on their radar. "I've got a very easy product to market," he said. "This is a wonderful state." Here are the highlights from what Stein said in a lengthy discussion. On landing Major League Baseball: "Certainly, we've talked with the folks at the Carolina Hurricanes, and I've talked with Tom Dundon about it, and I'm thrilled at the possibility. I'm a baseball fan and would love to have a major league team here." On a Triangle Children's Hospital: "I'm a strong supporter of this initiative. I figure if you can get Duke and Carolina agreeing on something, then we should be able to get Democrats and Republicans to come together, too. It will not only help kids get healthier by bringing more expertise to the region, but with that expertise will come research dollars, will come ancillary employers who want to take advantage of this incredible asset that the state will be developing." On political intervention at colleges: "I think that we need to be careful that the federal government should not get into their daily business. I think the state government should not get into their daily business. I have been concerned about the way the UNC system Board of Governors operates and tries to micromanage the individual campuses. When the government gets too heavy-handed, they can end up killing the golden goose that lays the egg." On access to affordable housing: "There's that saying, which is, if you build it, they will come. And what we're learning in North Carolina is that if you don't build it, they will still come. What we need to do is to start building it, because when you have increased demand and supply is not keeping up, prices go up." On the child care crisis: "What I want is for parents to have a choice. You can either stay home with your child if that's what you want to do, or if you want to stay in the workforce and continue your career, you can do that." And our final general news story is by Kaylee Thompson. RTP gets another hub for live, work, and play. Hoffman and Associates to develop new transit center with retail, residences, hotel. Research Triangle Park's new transit center will be much more than just a mobility hub as the park advances its vision for a live, work, play community. Coming off its success with Seaboard Station in Raleigh, Hoffman and Associates has been chosen as the master developer for the Triangle Mobility Hub within RTP. What was originally announced as a solely transit center will now be a 19-acre mixed-use development with office space, residences, retail, and a hotel. The transit center, a partnership between Go Triangle and the Research Triangle Foundation, will anchor the development. It will be less than a mile from Hub RTP, the park's new downtown. The office space will provide a new headquarters for Go Triangle and be integrated with residences, retail, and public spaces. A release from Hoffman and Associates says RTP's landscape will be thoughtfully integrated into the neighborhood's design, supporting sustainability goals and offering residents a direct connection to the outdoors. "We are honored to be selected as the master developer for this landmark neighborhood, which will celebrate both connectivity and nature," said Maria Thompson, president of Hoffman & Associates. Hoffman & Associates, with offices in Washington, D.C. and Raleigh, did not release specific numbers for office space and residential units. The developer is also working on the public-private RUS bus development in downtown Raleigh, where plans call for a new bus station plus a 23-story building with 385 apartments and 20,000 square feet of retail space. In RTP, the Transit Center is supported by a $25 million federal grant. Hoffman and Associates will lead the development team that consists of Opidin, LS3P, HDR, Swift Partners, Moriarty, CBRE, Graystar, and Concord. The Research Triangle Park has long looked to be more of a place where people also lived. This mixed-use development is the latest step in helping create a 15-minute city within RTP. This includes a $30 million bill that would help modernize RTP's infrastructure. The park's owners and tenants association have also voted to approve a set of revised land covenants. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World. The first story on this page, Western NC Food Bank gets support. NC Port Council and Smithfield Foods help out Manna Food Bank. The North Carolina Port Council and Smithfield Foods donated $30,000 and 30,000 pounds of pork products to a food bank in Western North Carolina. The Manna Food Bank, based in Asheville, has served Western North Carolina since 1983, and of course that area was hit hard by the devastation of Hurricane Helene last year. Smithfield's 30,000 pound donation included lunch meat, hams, and smoked sausage, and was the equivalent of 120,000 servings. Our North Carolina farmers take pride in supporting their communities, and we're proud to represent them in helping the Manna Food Bank fight hunger, said Roy Lee Lindsay, CEO of the North Carolina Pork Council. We'd like to thank Smithfield Foods for the significant donation of pork products, which will go a long way to help alleviate food insecurity in Western North Carolina. Craig Westerbeek, president of hog production for Smithfield Foods, said the partnership with Manna will ensure that nutritious meals reach those who need them most, including our neighbors still recovering from the devastating impacts of Hurricane Helene. The Port Council's $30,000 donation will fulfill a $30,000 matching donation pledge for a total donation of $60,000 to Manna Food Bank. Foundation supports Raleigh Rescue Mission. An expansion of the Raleigh Rescue Mission with a new facility in Knightdale is getting help from the SECU or CQ Foundation. The foundation awarded a $500,000 challenge grant to the Raleigh Rescue Mission to support the new campus for women and children experiencing homelessness. The mission currently serves about 1,600 people per year, and CEO John Luckett said the mission has to turn away around 90% of those who reach out. The 100-room facility will provide transitional housing for up to 350 women and children. RRM's goal is to help the homeless gain stability and self-sufficiency. The Raleigh Rescue Mission is able to assist 120 individuals in its Raleigh location. SEC Foundation Board Chair Chris Ayers noted, "Homelessness in Wake County continues to increase each year, making the need for services and housing that much more important." Luckett said, thanks to generous donors like CQ Foundation, RRM's second campus, The Garden, will change lives on an unprecedented scale. First responders provide support for children. First responders from police departments in Raleigh, Apex, Knightdale, Wendell, and Chapel Hill came together May 1 to assemble First Responder Kits for Kids, an initiative to comfort children facing unexpected emergency situations. The event was the sixth collaboration with Walmart and also had the support of the Southeast Raleigh Promise. And finally, Blue Cross NC helps Book Harvest in statewide push. A Durham nonprofit that looks to provide books for children is looking to make a statewide impact thanks to a collaboration with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina. The goal is to engage with families in all of North Carolina's 100 counties. Blue Cross NC will offer free children's books provided by Book Harvest at events across the state. At Book Harvest, we know that literacy begins at birth, in the home, powered by parents and nourished by books, said Ginger Young, the founder of Book Harvest. The goal is that Blue Cross NC, working closely with Book Harvest, can ensure that families across the state have an abundant supply of children's books. This partnership underscores the power of books to bring families together and promote early literacy and health outcomes for children, said Angela Boykin, CEO of Healthy Blue, Blue Cross NC's Medicaid-managed care plan. The partnership is a big leap for Book Harvest, which is looking for ways to make sure children have access to books. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, starting with Lauren Onasorge's page, Aviation and Technology. NC State Spinout and SAS team up, saving whales among the ways the partnership can make a difference. Fathom Science and SAS Institute are partnering to save the whales, literally. The companies, one with 12 employees and the other with more than 6,000 in the Triangle, both started in laboratories at NC State University. Now, the pair is teaming up on a project that could help save a species of whale. Fathom's co-founder, Joseph Zambon, was a research professor at NC State, part of the Ocean Observing and Modeling Group. Over the years, he would assemble $20 million in research and development funding. "We just realized that a lot of stuff we were doing was very much commercially viable," he said. "That stuff was ocean forecasting, and the AI models Fathom developed have been used in search and rescue, the fishing industry, and through the project with SAS, whale protection efforts." Taylor Shropshire, head of marine resiliency at Fathom Science, said Fathom can run a model in just minutes that tells rescue teams where they should target their search when looking for, say, a rafter who was pulled out to sea. Foreign governments and organizations have been calling. Zambon said Fathom built Indonesia's equivalent of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The company also provides forecasting for 40 different ports around the world. But not everything makes money. SAS, as part of its Data for Good initiative, volunteers some of its staff to help on data projects that may not have a tremendous business case. One application of the current predicting AI models is figuring out where threatened species may be in the ocean. In this case, it's the North Atlantic right whale. Fathom and SAS can create advanced AI models to predict where high-risk areas are to better inform the marine industry and protect the whales. Brantley remembered as visionary RDU leader. John Brantley III, who guided Raleigh-Durham International Airport from a tiny out-of-the-way station to a bustling international airport, has died. According to his obituary, Brantley, 82, passed away unexpectedly on May 2nd. Brantley's love of flying started when he was just 7, traveling with his grandmother on a Capital Airlines DC-2 from Norfolk, Virginia to Raleigh, he told Triangle Business Journal in 2010 when he was named its Business Person of the Year. Brantley wanted to be a pilot, but his poor eyesight prevented him from flying planes in the military, so he enrolled at NC State University, earning his degree in civil engineering in 1964 and then his master's in civil engineering at Northwestern University. After working with the Federal Aviation Administration, he came to RDU in 1977 to develop a long-range plan. In 1982, he became airport director, launching a tenure that would see the construction of a 10,000-foot runway, Terminal 2, and the redevelopment of Terminal 1, among other accomplishments. Under his leadership, the airport grew steadily. A second terminal, Terminal C, was added, as was a second airstrip and then a parking deck. "It is a facility of which we can all be proud," Brantley once said. "It reflects the quality of the region." Golf cart startup now rolls into new markets. As the trade war hits the golf cart industry, a Raleigh startup isn't feeling the brunt yet. Years after entrepreneur Josh Hine prototyped his Solo Rider golf cart, he says Solo Golf is nearing profitability. Solo Golf has expanded its scooter-like vehicles to also target the commercial sector, from hospitals to warehouse complexes. It, at long last, is making money, but enter in a trade war. Market leaders such as Club Car and EasyGo often assemble their vehicles in the U.S., but source components from countries like China and Taiwan. Solo Golf's carts are assembled in America, and some components are imported. But some imported components are unavoidable. "We're still trying to get a grasp on what is our overall increase in production costs," Hine said. It could add up to a 5% increase in the cost of making a golf cart. And finally, portion of park near RDU will close in June. As the body that governs Raleigh-Durham International Airport pushes for development on a large portion of Lake Crabtree County Park, the impacts will soon be felt. Wake County leases the land from the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority, but that lease expires at the end of June. Going forward, a 136-acre portion of the park, the area closest to Interstate 40, will not be included in a future lease. Trail closures will be effective at the close of the day, June 1. Airport and county officials are keeping quiet about a mystery developer's interest in transforming the area into an entertainment destination. Last year, the airport authority put out a request for information asking developers for proposals. And now we turn to Zach Ezzone's page, Higher Ed and Life Sciences. St. Augs seeks help to cover its debts. Raleigh School is cash poor but land rich and looking to make a deal. St. Augustine's University is pursuing land deals in an effort to repair its financial standing as the school works to keep its accreditation and wipe out tens of millions in debt. The historically black college in Raleigh is seeking $70 million in bridge financing and searching for partners to develop some of its campus. The school is saddled with debt and has faced financial challenges and threats to its accreditation for years. The school's enrollment is projected to be below 100 in the fall 2025 semester. School officials are putting out a request for qualifications, or RFQ, in an attempt to attract investors. The university has identified about 70% of its 100-acre campus for potential deals. St. Augustine's plans to pursue land lease deals for parcels of its main campus on Oakwood Avenue. The school is open to potentially selling land located outside of its main campus, said Brian Bulware, chairman of the school's board of trustees. We have $200 million in value of land, Bulware said. He said the school is trying to develop a plan that supports its long-term operations. Our sense of urgency is based on the fact that this is what we need to do, Bulware said. There's always been a sense of urgency. Part of the bridge financing the university is seeking would be used to retire $47 million in institutional debt, according to a campus master plan. This includes $11.44 million owed to the Internal Revenue Service, $1.65 million to the North Carolina Department of Revenue, and more than $14 million owed to Gothic Ventures, a Durham investment group that provided the school with up to $30 million in financing prior to the fall 2024 semester. The school put up its land to secure the loan. Duke offers buyouts, slashes spending. Duke University is cutting costs, including employee buyouts, to prepare for potential losses in federal funding. The private university in Durham is freezing hiring, eliminating vacant positions, and initiating an incentivized voluntary separation program, with further cuts likely to come this summer. Duke, in a statement, said the moves are aimed at reducing the scale of involuntary separations later this summer. Duke has suspended all capital spending on new buildings, renovations, and other projects that are not fully funded or determined to be essential. The school is also reviewing administrative programs that support the university, such as technology adoption, off-campus real estate, and on-campus space consolidation. To assure we are best positioned to continue to support our missions, we believe it is critical to take appropriate action sooner rather than later to lower costs and strategically realign our operations against lower federal funding levels going forward, said Daniel Ennis, Duke Executive Vice President. As of fall 2024, the school had more than 4,200 faculty. The campus had 9,200 total employees as of last summer. Duke, with an undergraduate enrollment of around 6,500, had operating revenue in fiscal year 2024 of $3.9 billion. Its endowment was valued at more than $11.9 billion as of June 2024. And finally, FDA approves migraine treatment. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved a Durham firm's new migraine treatment. Satsuma Pharmaceuticals has secured approval of Adzumi, spelled A-T-Z-U-M-I, a nasal powder treatment administered through the company's proprietary delivery device. The approval, which follows a previous regulatory setback for the company, marks a milestone for Satsuma and brings a new option for acute treatment of migraines to the market. Adzumi combines the long-proven benefits of the drug dihydroergotamine with the company's drug delivery platform, said Ryoshi Nagata, president and CEO of Satsuma, in a statement announcing the approval. We believe that Adzumi will contribute to improving the quality of life of patients struggling for relief from these highly disabling problems, Nagata said. In a quarterly financial filing in February, Satsuma's Japanese parent company, Shin Nippon Biomedical Laboratories, said it was making progress with the FDA toward approval while maintaining the company's commercial formulation line and preparing for a launch. The company also said it was continuing discussion with several pharmaceutical companies interested in marketing at Zumi. And there's also a big number on this page, $71.3 million. Verona Pharma's net product sales in the first quarter doubling the previous quarter's $36.6 million. The Raleigh company is seeing revenue surge after the launch of Otuvre as a treatment for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page on Greater Triangle. Disney's Asteria reveals first plans. New homes in Pittsburgh will be part of second Disney-themed community. After nearly a year and a half of anticipation, additional details about a Disney-themed community in Chatham County are coming to light after the main developers of the neighborhood submitted site plans. Per a preliminary plat submitted to the Pittsburgh Planning Board last month, the first phase of Asteria will contain 494 homes spread across around 200 acres. That will include 343 single-family homes, 57 townhomes, 50 duplexes, and 44 quadplexes. Asteria is a community by Story Living by Disney. The entire development will span 1,500 acres and include more than 4,000 residential units in Chatham Park. The plan, submitted by Disney's development partner, DMB Development of Arizona, also call for 25 acres for a future amenity site as well as additional acreage for open space and park space. Representatives of Cary-based Preston Development, the group behind Chatham Park, and DMB Development referred all questions on the development to Disney. Representatives of Disney did not return requests for comment regarding Asteria. The preliminary plat submission comes after a recent land purchase indicated the massive project, first announced in December 2023, was moving forward. The land is being used for this initial phase, but many of the details about the development remain under wraps. Vanessa Jenkins, Executive Vice President of Preston Development, said in November 2024 that Disney was planning to break ground on the development in the first quarter of this year and that the first homes would be available for sale in 2027. It's unclear what the current construction timeline is. Homes at Asteria are expected to start in the six figures. Asteria would be the second community from Story Living by Disney. The other one, called Cotino, is located in Rancho Mirage, California. Homes there sell for around $2 million, according to the development's website. Turkish firm eyes Goldsboro for plant. The company behind plans for a 200-job plant in Goldsboro is a Turkish firm that specializes in manufacturing breathable film. Multiple sources confirm the company is Pelsan Textil, that's P-E-L-S-A-N, Pelsan Textil, T-E-K-S-T-I-L, which is based in Istanbul and makes products used in the hygiene, medical, and insulation fields. According to the agenda for the May 6 meeting of the Wayne County Board of Commissioners, the board will vote on incentives for Project Istanbul. Triangle Business Journal previously reported that a company was planning to invest more than $82 million and create 216 jobs in Goldsboro. A public notice for an incentives hearing said the company would buy just shy of 32 acres containing two shell buildings at 404 and 408 Gateway Drive in Goldsboro. Representatives of Pelsan Textil declined to comment. Mark Pope, head of the Wayne County Development Alliance, did not respond to comment. Spokespeople for the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina and the NC State Department of Commerce declined to comment. Per the company's LinkedIn page, Pelsan Textil was founded in 2007 as a subsidiary of Hassan Group, a Turkish firm that oversees seven companies in its portfolio. Headquartered in Istanbul, Hassan Group is the most well-known name in the Turkish non-woven production industry, per its LinkedIn page. South Carolina firm grabs apartments. Once again, a South Carolina real estate developer is paying massive bucks for an apartment complex in North Carolina, this time in Southern Pines. Middle Street Partners, headquartered in Charleston, purchased the Lux and Legends apartment community in Morganton Park North for more than $92 million last month, according to Moore County deed records. The apartment complex, featuring nearly 380 apartment units, offers 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom apartments. The company previously purchased Pier 33, a 286-unit apartment complex located in downtown Wilmington that was developed by Raleigh's DeWitt Carolinas for a little more than $85.3 million in November 2024. the Lux and Legends apartment at Morganton Park North, a roughly 117-acre mixed-use development, were originally developed and built separately. The Legends apartments first came online in 2015. And finally, John Deere Building sells for $28 million. A building that houses logistics and warehousing for John Deere in Johnston County has sold for close to $30 million to a New York outfit, BRI Woodall Dairy LP, a group that in Secretary of State filings shares the same address with New York-based real estate investment firm Blue Rock, paid $28 million to acquire a 326,000-square-foot building at 2080 Woodall Dairy Road, according to Johnston County deed records. The land has a Benson address. The building was built in 1997. Blue Rock has been active acquiring properties in the Triangle area, including a more than 100,000-square-foot warehouse in Sanford in April 2024. And our final reporter page is written by Kate Tracy, Retail and Restaurants. Billiards Bar to open in Briar Creek, carry billiards owners to put a second Oak Room in a new location. Chalk Your Pool Cues, a pool bar, is coming to Northwest Raleigh. The Oak Room, a billiards and cocktail bar, plans to open in the next few weeks at 7990 Arco Corporate Drive in the Shops at Briar Creek, behind Briar Creek Commons. Brian and Mindy McIntyre, owners of High House Billiards in Cary, decided to open a second billiards venue after 17 years in the business. They also opened the Parkway Tavern restaurant in 2020. Brian McIntyre said he spent almost a year converting a former doctor's office into a billiards hall and cocktail bar that will serve Mindy McIntyre's signature cocktails, including a blackberry jalapeno margarita and a French martini. "We really love pool and love what we do, and my wife and I saw a hole in the market for league play," he said, adding that they've also noticed an increase in younger people wanting to play and join leagues. The Oak Room will have 8 full-size diamond pool tables in the 3,600-square-foot space. The McIntyres like the location off Highway 70 because it's closer to Durham than other Raleigh locales, plus they liked Briar Creek's high concentration of businesses and residences. "There's not a lot of places to shoot competitive pool around here," he said. The Oak Room's focal point is a handmade 47-foot bar that makes the space feel like a speakeasy. "We've had 17-plus years in the bar business, and making this thing the star of the show is what we decided to do. The pool tables are very, very nice, but we put this right in the middle of the room," Brian McIntyre said. Their business partners are Tom and Patty Kasnowski. The Oak Room will charge pool players $4 per person per hour. Charlotte's American Asset Corporation owns and operates Briar Creek Commons. New brewery breaks ground in West Raleigh. A new brewery is on the rise near Crabtree Valley Mall in Raleigh. Highwoods Properties held the groundbreaking for Crooked Hammock Brewery recently at 4501 Edwards Mill Road in the Glen Lake Office Park. The brewery and restaurant plans to open next spring. Skip Hill, Highwood Senior Vice President and Raleigh Market Leader, said he started working on the idea of bringing Crooked Hammock to Raleigh after a June 2022 visit to the brewery's North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina location. Hill said the site on Edwards Mill Road was previously slated to become an office building, but Highwoods went through a rezoning process to bring a more entertainment-focused venue instead. "We struck gold," Hill said of Crooked Hammock. The location will brew beer, seltzers, and hard teas in addition to offering a full menu of pub classics like nachos, pretzels, burgers, and more. The indoor space will flow seamlessly to the venue's backyard, complete with cornhole, yard games, and, of course, hammocks for lounging. Based in Delaware, Crooked Hammock currently has 2 breweries in Delaware and 1 in North Myrtle Beach. Crooked Hammock is also planning a 5th location in the Charleston area. After 20 years, brewery shutters amid bankruptcy. After more than 20 years in business, an award-winning craft brewery in eastern North Carolina has shuttered and filed for bankruptcy liquidation. Duck Rabbit Craft Brewery, located an hour east of Raleigh in Farmville, filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy in the Eastern District of North Carolina on April 29. It's at least the 4th craft brewery in the region to file for bankruptcy in recent weeks. Brewers have been warning that rising costs are leading to shrinking margins, and tariffs on items such as aluminum have only made the situation more difficult. Duck Rabbit owner Paul Philippon and his attorney J.M. Cook did not respond to requests for comment. The brewery opened in 2004. Bankruptcy documents show the brewery had $282,589 in assets. and $1.02 million in liabilities. Its largest creditor is the U.S. Small Business Association, which is owed $532,800. And finally, Bull City Cider Works closes in Cary. Downtown Cary is losing one of its many beverage venues. Bull City Cider Works, based in Durham, is shuttering its Cary Tap Room at 210 East Chatham Street across from Bond Brothers Brewery. The cider company's last day in its 3,000-square-foot space is May 11. You've been good to us, and we thank you so much for the last few years in this beautiful historic space, the cidery's Instagram post read. The Bull is heading back home to Durham to focus on our basket of award-winning apples and also our newest bouquet of At Drink Flowers Bev. The cidery also teased that a craft tap room is replacing it in its space in downtown Cary. Bull City Cider Works did not return a request for comment. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the guest column. This one is written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, North Carolinians Still Make Lots of Stuff. You've heard it as often as I have. We don't make things here anymore. It reflects the widespread belief that domestic manufacturing and other goods-producing industries have cratered since the implementation of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, in the mid-1990s, and China's entry into the World Trade Organization in 2001. It's a myth. The output of American manufacturing is higher than ever, even after adjusting for inflation. In our state, manufacturing output in dollar terms is higher today than it was in the 1990s, though it remains a bit lower than it was before the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009. Now, there has been a decline in manufacturing employment. In 1997, some 800,000 North Carolinians held manufacturing jobs. Today, that number is about 460,000. The primary story here isn't foreign competition driving manufacturers out of business. It's the use of automation and other technology to make manufacturing more productive. We've been through this before with another goods-producing industry, agriculture. When my great-grandparents were born, they and most other North Carolinians worked in agriculture. During the late 19th and early 20th centuries, as new machinery, seeds, fertilizers, and agriculture techniques proliferated, farmers came to produce vastly more output for each unit of input. Carolinians then migrated from farm labor to manufacturing, construction, retail, and other professions. Last year, North Carolina's agriculture and forestry sectors produced $7.4 billion in economic output. As far as I can determine, that's higher than ever before. Manufacturing exhibits the same pattern. The sector produced $108 billion worth of goods in North Carolina last year. That's 24% higher than in 1997, adjusted for inflation. Its composition has certainly changed. The dollar value of non-durable manufacturing is lower, but durable goods manufacturing has more than made up the difference. In dollar value, North Carolinians produce far more machinery, $8.6 billion worth, computers and electronics, $7.4 billion, vehicles and auto parts, $3.4 billion, and other transportation equipment, $4.6 billion. Then we do textiles and apparel, $2.6 billion. North Carolina firms produced $2.4 billion worth of furniture and wood products in 2023. That's down 34% since 1997. In the same year, 2023, North Carolina firms produced $28.9 billion worth of chemicals, plastics, and rubber products. These are vastly larger industries in our state and have been either holding their own or growing over time. More broadly, goods producing sectors in North Carolina, agriculture, manufacturing, resource extraction, and construction, had a total output last year of $159 billion. That's up 23% in real terms since 1997. Why might one think otherwise? Because the output of private services rose still faster, more than doubling to $548 billion. As our employment base shifted towards services, did we get poorer? Not at all. Personal income averaged $64,855 per North Carolinian in 2024, up 48% in inflation-adjusted terms since 1997. I'm not saying everything is hunky-dory. Regulations make it costlier than necessary to farm, manufacture, mine, and build, and too many North Carolinians lack the skills to perform these tasks. That's a telling fact, though. In goods-producing industries, our current challenge isn't a labor surplus, it's a labor shortage. And with our remaining time with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read as much as we can of the Executive Voice Q&A column, this one focusing on Emily McCoy. In a closer look, title, Principal Design Workshop, Raleigh, Hometown Greensboro, Education, Bachelor's Ecology, Evolution, and Environmental Biology, Appalachian State University, Master's Landscape Architecture, NC State University, family, husband, also a landscape architect, and a dog, Ruby, number of employees, 20 in Raleigh, and 186 total. If an outdoor area, whether it's a campus, mixed-use development park, or even a parking lot, feels especially comfortable and calming, chances are it's because of people like Emily McCoy, who thoughtfully designed it that way. McCoy leads the Raleigh office of Denver-based design workshop and also teaches landscape design at NC State University. She serves on design workshop's board for the firm's philanthropic design work in underserved communities across the country. McCoy did not know that landscape architecture was a career when she was younger. After college at Appalachian State University, McCoy started her career as an ecologist and then a horticulturist before delving into the field of landscape architecture and design, which combined her love for ecology and design. Her role has plenty of challenges now because of the start and pause nature of development projects awaiting financing. Design Workshop had turned toward more federally funded public work over the past few years, but that's changing. Now the sort of pendulum is shifting back to more private foundation work, private development work, McCoy said. Local projects include the NC Museum of Art's East Building expansion and other improvements. What is your definition of landscape design? We design everything that's outside of the building, whether it be the garden, a parking lot, a whole campus, a streetscape, and then engineers are our allied profession, where they do more the technical grading and storm design, drainage design. And we'll stop here with the story, but it does go on to mention that designers need to be brought in early due to unexpected costs, and also plant native trees and bushes. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.